Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza and Matt Polacek, only on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, thank you for joining us once again. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are all working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I was recently told that I don't ask for what I want or share how others can help. Well, here goes. You can all do me a huge favor. Please forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or to someone you know can benefit from a particular show. Now, while my co-host, Dr. Matt Polacek, takes time away from the show, we're bringing in some wonderful guest hosts who, like Matt, are making a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, our guest host today is Cindy DeFerdinand. She is a experienced nutritionist, health and wellness educator, and a professional life coach for C-suite executives, businesses, startups, and individuals. Cindy worked in the food and nutraceutical industry for more than 30 years and is a pioneer of developing nutritional programs. Now, in her role as clinical nutritionist and professional coach for Wisdom Foods, she has implemented an array of disciplines and methodology to analyze her clients' dietary habits, motivation, and drive to change. As you will learn when you check out her show, she is passionate about educating America on establishing and enjoying a healthy lifestyle. Cindy, I couldn't wait to get you on as a guest, so thanks for joining me as a co-host.
So happy to be here, Alan. Thank you so much for having me on today.
Well, it is great. I know we're going to have a great show today, but before we get to that, share a little bit about what a professional life coach does.
What is a coach? Okay, so a coach is somebody that partners with another person, partners with them to move forward, and is skilled at asking powerful questions that get at what does a person really, really want in their life and where do they really want to go, and then helps them figure out how to get there, partners with them to implement that plan, that vision, those goals, those steps that will get you moving from A to Z.
So what it sounds like is that you can help me figure out what I'm going to do when I grow up.
I could if you haven't figured it out yet. Or if you change your mind. Lots of people change their mind and shift gears, you know, walk down another hallway. So maybe I help you open the door, figure out which door you really want to open.
That sounds great. So again, before we bring our guest, share a little bit about your new radio show, The Concierge Coaches.
Well, The Concierge Coaches show I do with Bruce Cameron, and the two of us came up with this idea. We love the field of coaching. He's an executive coach. I do a lot of business coaching and business startup, as well as nutrition coaching. We wanted to get the word out there to the average person, the average listener. What is a coach? What is it? What isn't it? And really put some wonderful guests on that help people in all different walks of life move their lives forward. So really to just get people understanding more what a coach is and what it isn't.
Well, I'm looking forward to the show. I will be listening.
Thank you.
So our topic today, Cindy, ties kind of right into a coaching practice because it's called The Wonders of Language. And as we know, without language, it'd be very hard to coach people.
Yes, it would be. Now, you could watch their body language, of course, which is really important. Or you could close your eyes and just really be present with somebody. But coaching is really about choosing your words. It's a skill set that you learn. And you have to choose the right words, not really be focused on what somebody's saying, but, you know, how are you going to get them to open up? How are you going to get them to drill down, dig a little deeper to find their own answers? Because it's not about telling them what to do. It's not like consulting, which I also do. It's really about helping them find the right answers. If you don't choose your words carefully and the right questions, you can miss the entire thing. It's really about it's about the client, not about you.
And I agree. And in so many things, it's all about the questions that you ask. And we have some questions for our guest. Our guest is Ian Roberts, and he's taught in Switzerland, in Wales, and in Germany, and he's currently the professor of linguistics at the University of Cambridge and a fellow of Downing College. He has published 6 monographs and 2 textbooks and has edited several collections of articles. He received his PhD from the University of Southern California in 1985 and taught at the universities of Geneva, Bangor, and Stuttgart before taking his present position at Cambridge in 2000. Now, Professor Roberts is a generative linguist and an enthusiastic adopter of Chomsky's minimalist program. As the author of The Wonders of Language, or How to Make Noise and Influence People, he offers a stimulating introduction to our greatest gift as a species, our capacity to articulate language. Ian, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Hi, thanks very much for having me. It's great to be here.
Well, I thought it was wonderful that you were going to be able to be in studio, that although you were normally in Cambridge, that you are, I guess you are a visiting professor now. Is that at USC right now?
Yes, that's right, for this semester, yeah.
Well, let's go right into the book. I know that I've had quite a few people ask questions. It's interesting that for those that listen to the show know that I often read the book at the gym. And uh-huh. and now most of the people at the gym know what I do. So people walk up to me. So while I'm sitting there pedaling, they walk up and they go, "So, what's the subject matter going to be this week?" And they'll look at the book. And there were quite a few people that said, "Oh, that looks really interesting. I'm looking forward to it." But a few people said, how do you get to a point to where you decide I'm going to write a book on something expansive as The Wonders of Language?" So share with us a little bit about what drove you to write the book and where we're at with it.
Okay. Well, actually, it was my son who drove me to write the book. It's mentioned at the very beginning. It's a few years ago now. He was just finishing the equivalent of high school in the UK system, and he did a course on English, on the English language, and he got very interested, and he kind of has a vague idea what I do for a living, but, you know, most of the time I was just dad, you know how it is with kids. And suddenly he realized, he made a connection, I think, between what he was interested in high school and what I teach. So he just came home one day and he said, "You know, Dad, I think someone should write a book for teenagers and young people about language that would be fun to read." And I said, "Sure, but I'm not going to do it." But then he nagged me a little bit. And then I got this idea of the sort of how-to theme, you know, how to make noises and influence people, and each individual chapter has a how-to title. And once I got that idea, I thought that could work. And I ran it by him, because, you know, he's the guy who gives
fabulous.
Me the clearance.
Wonderful.
And he said, "Sure, that sounds great." And so I went ahead and did it.
How did you come up with the title? I'm just curious.
I just kind of thought of it. I mean, I was, you know, it just came to me. And just this idea of organizing the book into, I think it's 10 chapters that all have pretty much that how-to theme. Once I just literally wrote that down on a little scrap of paper and showed it to my son, and he said, "Yeah.
That's it?"
Yeah. So
you had your consultant write it home.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. Yeah.
That's fabulous.
Yeah, yeah. Free, too.
Now, I was just saying, now, because you mentioned that your son, a teenage son, is a consultant in this, we have a listener question that has come in, and this one, I think, touches on kind of where our young people are. This one reads, it says, "Disheartened and on the brink of leaving the teaching profession, 3 years ago, I chose to move from teaching high school down to 5th and 6th grade levels. My belief was that this younger group could be more easily inspired and enjoyable to teach. I created competitions that challenged each student to find quirky, unusual, and awe-inspiring words. After selecting their favorite word, they then proceeded to look up its definition and write a short poem or story for submission the next day. The results were just as I expected. Not only did their vocabulary and writing skills improve dramatically, they were having a fun time during the process. Thank you for writing a book to remind us all of the beauty of language." And this is from Adrian in Louisiana.
Very nice.
That's great. Well, thank you, Adrian. That's really nice to hear. I do think that, especially with younger kids, they have a huge curiosity about language. They love to play with language, making up little rhymes and things like that. And they should really, I think it's a great thing to encourage them to do that, because later in life, that love of language will stay with them, and it helps in so many ways.
Now, what are your thoughts of what this sort of infers, which is that by the time they've gotten to high school, we can't have as great an influence, that maybe they've already gotten into some bad habits?
Yeah, it's difficult to say. I mean, I'm not enough of an educationalist expert to really say, but it's clear that, you know, adolescents and teenagers can be more difficult than younger children. What is also true, this we do know from linguistics, is that younger children have a greater capacity to learn languages than adolescents. You start to lose it from about the age of 8 or 9. And by the time you're 16, it's kind of gone, you know. So if you want to teach people or expose people to a foreign language, then get them young.
Early is better.
Yeah.
What about, what do you think the impact of social media has had on the literacy rates and, you know, teenagers' interest in language?
I think it may have actually, a lot of people say it's had a negative impact, but I'm not so sure. I think it may have actually in some ways had a positive impact, because if you look at how, you know, how they text and how they use abbreviations and things like that, it's actually very inventive. It's very creative.
Yeah.
I learned 2 new words last week from my 16-year-old daughter.
Nice. I learn all the time from my children.
Can you share them?
Well, one of them was Aight, A-I-G-H-T. And I said, "What's that?" And she said, "Oh, it's just short for all right."
Interesting. they have a lot of shortcuts.
Yeah,
ones that we don't understand, right?
Yeah,
but they're teaching us. Yeah, that's very good.
Yeah.
So you see a positive. That's great.
I think potentially, yeah. I mean, you know, I think like with most kinds of new technology, there's positives and negatives. Mm-hmm. You know, and I know people talk a lot about the negative side of texting and so forth. But I think that there's potentially a positive too.
Now, if you had a choice, at what age would you like to see people reading your book? Where do you think it would make the best influence or the greatest effect?
Yeah, that's a good question. I would say late teens, sort of towards the end of high school, which was the age my son was when he first suggested it. So sort of 17, 18, 19,
nice.
That sort of age. I mean, I think people of almost any age could read it and I hope enjoy it, but you know, it was kind of aimed at that age group primarily. It's aimed at people who are thinking maybe of doing something on English or language or linguistics in college, but don't really know that much about it, and they'd like to just find out more. So it's, you know, it's aimed at someone to, in a way, to help people to choose a course at college.
You know, one of the things that I got out of it, and for those that don't know, we're here in Los Angeles or close by, which obviously is Hollywood. Over the last 5 or 6 years, I have read a lot of scripts, so I now have a connection into that industry. And what I found by reading your book was I felt that I was going to be able to read these scripts with greater clarity. In other words, it almost like it opened up a greater picture for me as to what the writer was thinking based on choices of certain words. So, you know, in any situation, if you think about something that's going to open things up for you or make you see things a little clearer, this was certainly one of the things I got out of the book.
And the fact that the book is simply written, and I love that you have it written for that late high schooler who's thinking mm-hmm. about jumping into college, mm-hmm. but would it be appropriate as well for somebody entering college and maybe taking some of these courses?
Oh, absolutely.
For the first time? Very
definitely.
Simple introductory how-to format. You break it down.
Yeah. That was the idea.
Yeah. Well,
I don't want to say dummy it down, but you simplify it.
Yeah. In fact, speaking of breaking it down, I think that would be a good thing. Why don't you give us sort of a brief overview of some of the topics that are covered so that our listeners have an idea of what we're talking about?
Okay. So it looks at really chapter by chapter each of the main areas in linguistics, each of the main parts of the structure of language. So at the beginning, it's very first chapter is just called How to Make Noises, and that's just about the sounds of speech and how you can produce them. And then there's a chapter called How to Build a Word, which is about the structure of complex words and how we can break it down. There's a chapter called How to Say Absolutely Anything You Want To, which is about the structure of sentences, because sentences can be made as long as and complicated as you want them to be. There's a chapter, one which I was in some ways most pleased with, actually, called How to Find Lost Languages. And it's about the history of languages and how we can, in some ways, under the right conditions, really discover facts about languages that have disappeared. And so it goes on in that vein. So it covers the main areas of linguistics.
That's
basically.
Very interesting, the part about lost languages. And have you ever discovered a lost language in your work?
Not me personally. I've never actually discovered a lost language in that sense, but I've been associated with work which looks at trying to see the techniques for discovering some of the aspects of these things, which is some of it's kind of tricky and controversial, but it's very, very interesting.
Nice.
Now, and I think that's a great point you bring up in regards to the chapters, because it appears as though they're written independently, mm-hmm. you know, so that I felt that as I'm looking at it, that if I'm thinking of something or I have a concern in one area, I can jump right to a chapter and
dive
I can dive right into that chapter, and I don't necessarily, if I'm not thinking about, let's say, you know, lost languages, you know, it's okay, I can skip right through that, and I didn't miss anything. So my question is, was that intentional? And if so, why?
That was absolutely the intention, yes. In fact, as I say right at the beginning of the book, it's not a whodunit. You don't need to read it in sequence to pick up the little clues that I'm leaving, you know, about the plot. It's not like that. Each chapter is kind of self-contained. And the idea there was, look, not everyone is interested in every aspect. If you start reading a chapter and you find it's too difficult or just boring, then skip it.
I love that. Because I read books like that. I don't always want to read it cover to cover. I just need pieces of it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's great. You wrote the book and you're okay with that.
Yeah.
Jump around.
I think that's the whole idea. Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Very good.
Right. And we have another listener question, and this one is coming over through instant message. And this one reads, it says, in your introduction, you mentioned Mr. Roberts being an adopter of Chomsky's minimalist program. Please share what that program entails.
Good question.
Yeah, okay. I'll see what I can do. Noam Chomsky is the founder of modern linguistics, of the main ideas in linguistics, and so a lot of what's in the book actually originates with him. His minimalist program is something that he came up with around 20 years ago. It's an attempt to try to construct a general theory of language, an account of language, which is as simple as possible. And that is very difficult because language is very complicated. But to try and make it as simple as possible would be, so says Chomsky, to really get to the bottom of it, you know, to get to its really intrinsic nature, which I think can be done. But it's very difficult. I don't really talk about that very much explicitly in this book. It's kind of implicit. In one or two chapters, but I don't really go into it in great depth.
But wouldn't that also make it easier for most people to understand and jump into it without having to be an expert or an educator? If it's
And I think actually where it's really important, I do try to do that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I do say in one or two chapters, well, look, the really key thing about this aspect of language is you just need to know one thing, right?
Break it down simply.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's more digestible.
I hope so.
Yeah, that's the point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, fabulous.
So we had mentioned about in regards to what age and stuff, but, I mean, who do you believe will benefit the most from reading this book?
Well, like I say, it's primarily aimed at younger people, but not exclusively. I think, you know, anyone at any time of life really could read it, and I hope get something out of it. My brother, who's certainly not so young anymore, read it, and he enjoyed it, except he said he found the second chapter boring, so I said, well, skip it then.
I love that. That was the whole point of making the chapters independent, so you can jump in where you like.
Yeah.
And also just, you know, older people just sort of diving into language one more time and finding the romance behind it.
Yeah.
Right? You've lost your touch with it to reacquaint with it.
Yeah, I think that's, I very much hope that would be a reaction that older people could have.
Yeah. Wanted to ask you a personal question. What drew you to language initially, drove you to the study of language?
I don't really know, actually. It's just that when I was in high school, first of all, I was a very bad student. I was very lazy. But the one thing I liked was languages. Like I did French and German and, you know, the usual languages that you do in the UK anyhow. That was they were really just the only subjects that I took any interest in. And so my teachers, at least some of them, were very good about that. I had a German teacher who was great, and he really encouraged me.
Nice.
I think otherwise I wouldn't have done much with my life, actually, because, like I say, I wasn't trying so hard.
Now you brought up the fact of going to school in the UK. Now, one of the things that I'm aware of, and many people may not be, is that it is natural for you to learn multiple languages there, something that is not something that happens here in the United States.
Yes, that's so true.
How do you think your book is approached, or is it approached differently from someone in the United States, let's say, who has only learned one language, versus people in Europe who in many cases speak 2, 3, 4 languages, and it's very common for them?
Well, the book is aimed primarily at speakers of English from whatever part of the English-speaking world. In fact, I talk a little bit in a couple of places about what makes British and American English different. I don't assume any knowledge of any other languages, but I mention them here and there, languages that I know, like Italian or French. But you don't really need to know a lot about them. If you do, obviously, it's that much easier. But you don't really need to. Again, what I'd like to think is that someone who's monolingually English might have their interest in languages piqued again and may go back and take a course in French or something. So
would you mind telling us what the difference between American English and British English is?
Well, there's a lot of them. but obviously there's words, you know, individual words like, sidewalk in the US, and we say pavement in the UK, for example. And in pronunciation, there are differences which everyone is aware of, right, because we can recognize each other's accents. But I describe some of the differences. So one of the things that people really subconsciously are aware of, I think, is that in British English, we don't pronounce the letter R when it comes after a vowel. So the word for car, right, we just say car, right? There's no R there in the pronunciation, right? And in American English, mostly people say car.
Ooh.
Unless you're from New England, right? Then you say car.
Yeah.
That's one of the big differences, because there's a lot of words with R's in them, right? And so... other things, certain other vowels, like it, we have a vowel which is an O in a word like a lot, and that is a different vowel in American English. It's something like, well, it depends on the part of the U.S., but it's something like a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you say it, L-O-T, you would say it.
A lot?
Yeah, see? That's not the way I say it.
Interesting.
So,
subtle differences, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've actually been around people who have said... when someone is speaking more of a British English, but I've been here in America, and they've said, speak English. I'm like, that really is English, okay? You're speaking an American version of it, and you're not understanding what they're saying, but it really is English, you know? So,
yeah, it is.
All right, we have another listener question, and this one reads, it says, I ordered your book and I'm looking forward to its arrival. I too love words and agree that their use can positively change lives, especially those of our inner city youth whose verbal and writing skills are nothing short of deplorable. What do you believe can be done to reverse this decline in verbal and writing skills?
Okay, thanks. Yeah, I think disagree a little bit with one aspect of that question. I think that there is a problem of general literacy levels and people's writing and reading abilities in inner cities, but not only in inner cities, right? There's a definite problem there. And really, we just need, on both sides of the Atlantic, we need to just train English teachers better. And I think put more resources into education. I think that's the answer. I think it's a political issue, primarily. But as regards the verbal skills of inner-city kids, especially in the US, I'm not so sure that they're that deplorable. If you think of the whole hip-hop rap culture, that's a very sophisticated set of verbal skills those guys have.
I would agree.
So I'm not so sure about that point.
Okay. What language... through your studies, have you enjoyed the most learning? If you had to pick one that you dove into deeper?
I guess I would have to say Italian, because, and this is for reasons that are not at all intellectual, really. It's because my wife is Italian,
So that's very personal.
Yeah, yeah.
I was going to say it's a very romantic language, and my husband is Italian as well. So very, very romantic language.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
What about the language really?
Well, it just has very good associations for me, you know, because Italy's a beautiful place. We go on vacation there every year, and we really enjoy it. And you know, my in-laws don't speak English. My wife does, but my mother-in-law certainly doesn't. And so, you know, I have to practice my Italian when I'm there, and that's nice.
So you didn't actually study Italian?
I studied it for 1 year, actually, which gave me the basics. And then I just met some Italians.
I love that. Great way to learn the language,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's fabulous. That's a language that I've taken a little stab at myself. Mm-hmm. Probably not nearly as well as you have. Being a language expert. Mm-hmm. So anything else about language itself and the study of it that has enriched your personal life that you connect to personally?
Well, I think, I mean, and this really comes back to the main point of the book in a way. I personally really believe that by understanding language and studying language or any language, you know, English or Italian or what have you, you can really learn something about human nature and about yourself. And I think that can be very enriching. And that was really one of the big motives for writing the book.
So tell me a little bit more about that, how you can discover things about yourself through language.
Well, I think, you know, it's language primarily that makes us different to all the other animals and creatures on the planet, because they don't really have language, or at least they don't have it in the same way that we do, anything like as sophisticated as human language. And so, you know, each one of us is carrying around in our minds this most amazing ability. And many people are not, well, because we speak language all the time and think in language all the time, we take it completely for granted. But in actual fact, you know, there's something quite amazing there. So that to me is one of the most important points that I wanted to try to get across.
Now, how often do you refer back to things like just basic storytelling? Because I know one of the things that has changed so much in our world, you know, is storytelling. And one of the things that one of my companies does is we take kids to specialized programs, at-risk youth. And what we've found is one of the most beneficial things there is many of these schools have taken on an American Indian format of storytelling, so that they will go back and sit down, and these kids are now learning to sit and to tell stories around a circle. They refer to it as rap or forum, mm-hmm. or whatever, but it is storytelling the way in which American Indians did, you know, 150 years ago. So tell us a little bit about what has changed, and again, maybe for the better, sometimes maybe for worse.
Well, yeah, I think really the point I would make in regard to what you were just describing about those programs for storytelling is it's very similar to what the earlier listener said about having young kids just find interesting words. I think it just brings out everyone's natural interest in language. And it helps to maybe I'm just being old-fashioned here, but my feeling is that sitting down and listening to a story and paying attention is a good thing to do. And, you know, these days maybe there is a bit of an attention span issue, you know. I mean, like I said, I don't want to sound like an old fogey, but, you know, maybe.
Yeah. The art of storytelling. I know I have grandchildren, and my youngest granddaughter, from the time she was very small, she's only going to be six, but two or three loved telling stories and was really good at it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, her stories were great. So do you find that some people generally have a natural inclination to the study
so.
Of language?
I think so, yeah.
Or
I think
ability to speak and share. And
I think so. I mean, look, we recognize it all with some people. Some people are really good at telling jokes, right? And some people aren't. And and a joke is just a funny story, right? I mean, it is a story. Some people just seem to have a natural ability. Some of them make a lot of money from it. So
yes, indeed.
Yeah.
Now, do you feel that we have changed as a society with, you know, with everything being so visual? Obviously, everybody has a screen in front of them. There's many people that have said that we have gone from being a very auditory society to now being an incredibly visual society. Do you feel that that's happened? And if so, what are your thoughts on it?
I guess it's happening, yeah. I don't know. Like I said earlier, I think especially as you get older, you tend to imagine that the world was a much better place when you were young. But I, you know, it's a trap I try to avoid falling into. So I'd like to say that really there are good and bad aspects to every kind of new development, you know. And sometimes, obviously, we have to be wary of the negatives, but it's also important to recognize and celebrate the positives.
Oh,
I mean, you know,
absolutely.
My kids have access to information, you know, in a way that I couldn't have dreamt of when I was their age. You know, and that's great, right?
Yeah. No, and I agree. In fact, and I just recently told a story in regards to one of my sons, and they were talking about school, and they were saying that they thought that he was not doing as well as he should. And I pulled out my phone, and I read a text that he had sent me recently. And I said, he was 14 years old, and I said, here's a text that he sent me. It says, Dad, I want you to buy this property in Africa. And then I put in why. And he said, because it's struck by lightning 2,000 times a week, and I did some checking, and there are underground streams, and the water that can
wow.
take the electricity as a conductor and take it to the city. And he said, I did some checking, and the city does not always have electricity. It's sometimes they do, sometimes they don't. And so I'm sharing this with the school personnel, and I said, I don't think the problem is that he's not doing well in school. I think the problem is that he's not being motivated. I said, because he certainly isn't deficient, because at that age, all I was thinking about was like girls and food
right,
and
right. He
motorcycles.
Totally I mean, he researched it.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah. And I said, so to add to what you're saying, you know, the abilities that are out there, the opportunities that are out there to research information and to do something and to have somebody at 14 years old. And he says, Dad, it's great because we get to do what you like to do. You'll be able to help people. And he says, and we'll be able to make money, you know.
Right.
So yes, I agree. There's some incredibly positive things as well about, you know, having that screen in front of you. And by the way, the end of that story was I said on my text, and I went, wait a minute, aren't you in school right now? He's like, whoop.
Whoops.
Anyway, with that, we're going to take a break, but I want everybody to stay with us. We are talking about the wonders of a language. You're listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, Westshield Adolescent Services and Westshield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
Perfect way that we all can understand.
Right.
All right, and we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking to Professor Ian Roberts, and we are talking about the wonders of language. So let's use that as the question. So tell us, what are some of the many wonders of language?
Yeah, okay, so where to begin? Well, I think one of the most interesting things is actually is simply the way we speak. Because we take it totally for granted all the time. But you can actually just do a little experiment on yourself. Next time you're just talking normally, think about what your tongue and your teeth and your vocal cords are doing. And it's a very, very fine-grained, elaborate, precise set of movements that are being made. And if you go just a little bit wrong, it just doesn't sound right. Just maybe doesn't even sound like English. And so this is something that we all just do all the time, quite unconsciously. You only notice it when you come across someone who maybe has some kind of problem, right? Then you suddenly realize, oh, wow. But otherwise, you know, for most of us, the lucky ones, it's just something that comes so easily and naturally. But it's really hard, and we are the only animals on the planet who can do it. So
I don't, it seems like my dog is talking to me sometimes.
Right.
Or at least trying.
Right. Communicating with you.
Yes, communicating.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things is there are things like stuttering and things like that. What are some of the things that you believe that causes that, and what are some things that can be done for those that maybe do to make it go away?
Yeah, that's a good question. Actually, as far as I'm aware, nobody really quite knows what the reason behind stuttering is, especially people who have quite a bad problem. It's not clear because, as far as we know, the the speech organs, the tongue, the teeth, or the lips, and so on, are completely normal in most cases of that kind. And there may be something neurological, but we don't know enough about the brain really to be sure. What we can do, well, there are some fairly well-known techniques that help people. One of the things that is very, very common is that even very bad stutterers can sing. Music helps. It helps a lot. And so you can sort of think of speaking as some kind of singing. Actually, I don't know if you know the movie The King's Speech.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, a lot of what the guy who helped the king get over his problem, a lot of those techniques are actually quite good ones. Although we don't really understand in any deep way why they work. We just know that they do.
And how quickly they would work, obviously.
Yeah. That takes time as well. That takes time. So
tell us another wonder of language to you as you've evolved through your career, something that you still go back to that sort of reignites you in the love of language.
Okay, well, another interesting one has to do with how we make new words, which we can do all the time. People say, oh, well, in the Oxford English Dictionary or Webster's Dictionary, you have a list of all the words of English. But that actually isn't really true. You have a list of all the words that the people who make the dictionary have recognized. But people are creating new words all the time. I mean, one recent one in the last couple of years, unfortunately, is Brexit, right? Which is a brand new word from, 3 years ago, that word didn't exist.
So it's more like slang, people just sort of...
People invent things. Journalists in particular tend to be very creative with this kind of thing. And what goes on there is you might think, oh, well, to make a new word, you just put letters together, right? But actually, that's not what it is. There's two levels of structure in language. One is how the sounds combine. And the sounds on their own don't mean anything, right? So the sound B doesn't mean anything, right? The sound R doesn't mean anything. But when you put them together, you get a little kind of word, and that does mean something. And then you can combine the words together to get something much more complicated. So there are two different levels of patterning which are completely independent. And what they do is they can take a system where you have 26 letters, or actually English has more sounds than letters. It has about 40 sounds. And you can combine and recombine those 40 sounds to get thousands and even millions of words and sentences. So that's a neat trick. Again, we're the only creatures on the planet who can do it.
That's fabulous. So. Very interesting. The idea for the book came from your son, and it's geared to somebody sort of to break it down towards simplistic and a great read, and they can jump from chapter to chapter. Tell us a little bit about what you teach at this point in your career.
Okay, well, at the moment, like I said, I'm a visiting professor at USC, so they're giving me a very easy time. So I'm just teaching one seminar, and that's on a new book that I'm writing, which is not aimed at a general public. It's a more sort of technical thing. But I've got some graduate students who are very interested, and so I'm enjoying that. Normally, when I'm in Cambridge, I have taught introductory courses to first-year college students, first-year undergraduates who are about, in the UK they tend to be a little younger than in the US, so they're about 18 or 19. And there I really enjoy doing that because that's when you get them interested.
Right? Nice.
I mean, that's...
Or it comes alive for them because they haven't really understood it. They're just talking and they're not really getting it underneath it.
Now, are the majority of your students, are they journalists? Who would be the ideal student for you?
Well, anyone who has an interest in language, basically. Our students, if you take a college degree in linguistics, there's a bunch of things you can go into afterwards. English teaching is an obvious one, especially teaching English abroad in non-English speaking countries. Journalism is another. there are some connections to computer science, so anything connected with sort of that area, computer science, informatics, again, there are possibilities. Linguists tend to do okay. We're surprisingly employable, actually.
That's good to know for our listeners out there, absolutely.
Yeah, and again, being here in Hollywood, I would think that it would be a great class for actors, for writers, for directors, people doing voiceovers.
Yeah. Or voice training. Something that I'm always interested to see is when you see an actor who you know, for example, the actor Kenneth Branagh, who's a British former Shakespearean actor, and he has a very British accent in his normal way of speaking. But he made a movie about a few years ago where he played an LA private detective. And I was just amazed at how good his American accent was. I certainly couldn't do it. But the people that train them know something about language, right? They have to. But also someone that talented obviously has a natural ability as well to pick things up. So,
yeah, I had noticed that also with the actor Andrew Lincoln, who is the lead in The Walking Dead. And I had started watching that show when it started years ago. And it's set in the South. It's set in Georgia. And the character is a cop, and all of a sudden now there's a zombie apocalypse. But the thing is that I had watched the show, and then a couple of years later I saw an interview with him. Strong British accent is his natural voice, and yet on that show I would have never even imagined that he was not somebody raised in Georgia with a Southern accent, an American accent, but a Southern part of it,
right?
You know, and so yes.
So you wonder how difficult is that to achieve? You said a natural ability, but it's also training, right?
I think it's both. I think you need both. Yeah, I think you have to have a natural knack for it, which clearly some very good actors do, but they need some training as well. Most of them, I think, can't just kind of walk in and suddenly produce some accent that's not their natural one to order. So.
And what about clearer speech? I mean, now we're getting into the subject of what maybe a speech therapist might work with. But do your students come in with those types of issues or questions and how to express themselves when they're speaking better?
To some extent. I mean, I have to say that it tends to be in Cambridge because we select students very carefully that mostly they're already pretty good. But I think something which really can, again, linguistics can help people with is writing more clearly, expressing yourself more clearly, you know, in organizing paragraphs and things of that kind. Yeah, I think it can be useful there.
Mm-hmm. All right. We have another listener question. So obviously people are very interested in this subject. This one reads, my daughter's psychology professor recently assigned her class a project which involved researching the misuse of language to influence and mislead thought. She came across the work of Michelle Damon, a technical writing graduate from USF, discussing political language and the term doublespeak. She has now become obsessed with the manipulation of language by our politicians and news media to desensitize, confuse, and influence the masses. Can you share your thoughts on this? And this is from Jerry in Utah.
Okay, well, thanks, Jerry, for the question. It's a tricky one because I don't want to touch on any current sort of political issues, but I think politicians have always, to a greater or lesser extent, tried to manipulate language to get people to believe what they want them to believe. I don't think that's unique to the current era by any means. And so I think that that's a tendency that politicians have for their own reasons. And again, I would say that, in fact, if you've got a reasonable knowledge of linguistics, it can help you see through some of that. So I think it could be useful for that.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a reason to read the book, right?
Right.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I think that's a really good reason to read the book. It is okay to touch on political things. We can go anywhere we want with stuff.
Especially on LA Talk Radio.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, I think that's part of the introduction of LA Talk Radio is that, you know, we are allowed to say whatever it is that we want, and you know, we're
I
not
love that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. And you
okay.
know, nobody is censoring us.
Okay.
But let's touch on that part again, because I think my thought is that it does seem like it is more blatant.
Yeah.
You know, than in the past. In other words, you know, I can also have been around long enough to remember, you know, other presidential campaigns or other campaigns in general. I think that there was a time, though, when things got so far off the rails that there was I think we had a media that would call people out on it more so. But I think now we have more of almost a fueling it, you know, kind of a jumping on a bandwagon and fueling information that isn't there, rather than than trying to shine a light on it and say, no, wait a minute, look, this is not provable or this is not accurate.
Or realistic. Right?
Or realistic, yeah. Mm-hmm. And so I think we do have a greater problem with that.
I think that may be true. I mean, I sort of, yeah, pulled my punches a little bit in my last answer.
Yeah.
I mean, I do think that it's more blatant nowadays.
Yes.
But that should make it easier to spot, right?
Yeah.
And I also think that the media is much more diffuse because of social media and so on. So, you know, the really quality outlets such as, say, the New York Times or the Washington Post are still there, and I think they still have some integrity, but they have much less influence than they used to have. Whereas anybody on Facebook or Twitter can say what they like, and sometimes that's not so great.
Yes. No, I agree, and I think that it can become a strategy of, you know, if you flood the market with enough disinformation, that eventually somebody will pick it up and run with it, and it will somehow get a level of credibility.
Right, whether it's real or not, and create some confusion. I'm curious about, like, the literal impact of language, you know what I mean, versus what you intend for someone
right.
to perceive. Like, as we're talking around this, I'm wondering how you approach that.
Oh, well, there's a whole chapter in the book on that, which is simply called How to Influence People. And it's about how we can say more than we mean and how we pick that up from other people.
Too much.
Sometimes, yes. But the techniques for doing that are fairly, I think we as linguists understand them quite well. So again, I think this could be something very useful actually for people.
I agree. So tell me a little bit about that in terms of how to be more clear.
Well, it's not. It's more a question of what you leave unsaid and allow other people to sort of make leaps on the basis of that. So a really simple example is imagine, you know, your husband says to you, oh, darling, I'm just going out for a drink, but I'm not leaving you. Right. So he explicitly says he's not leaving you. But what do you start to think? Why is he mentioning that?
Right.
He must be thinking about it. Right. Logically, it's just true. He's not leaving you, right? But in terms of how you read into what he said and didn't say, you start to get maybe a bit worried, you know?
So, right, why is he saying it?
Yeah.
Right.
Why is he saying it? That's the whole question. And that is that turns into this sort of interesting game. He said it because he wants me to think, because I want him to think, and it just goes on like this. There are a few examples of that in that chapter of the book.
So what I heard you say is it's more about what you don't say.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's what is left unsaid.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I see it as you're planting a seed and you're letting the other person's imagination run with it.
Yeah.
And in some cases, if you know them well enough, you know where they're going to run with it.
Mm-hmm.
So
yes, that's
yeah.
right. Yeah,
yeah. That it kind of ties into some of the investigative techniques that are used as well.
I guess so. Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, yeah,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
Well, I just glanced up at the clock, and I can't believe we've run out of time. But what I do want to do is that: where can listeners go for more information about you, about the book?
Okay. Well, the book's available on Amazon,
okay.
so they can just go there and search for it. It's also available through the Cambridge University Press website, which is www.cambridge.org, O-R-G. And you can also Google for me. If you just Google Ian Roberts Cambridge, you should find me. So those are three ways.
Yeah, in fact, and I was going to add to that too, because I know that just by Googling Professor Ian Roberts, a ton of stuff came up.
Yes.
You know, so it was very easy to find lots of information in regards to you. I want to thank you so much for coming on. I really want to acknowledge you for really bringing out something that is wonderful. I mean, our language is wonderful.
And sometimes forgotten.
And
that's
so forgotten.
Like.
You know, or taken for granted. I think it's something that we've taken for granted so much, and yet it's great. I think there's so many things that if you just kind of look back on things and go, wow, let's just really feel grateful that we have something so wonderful that has allowed us to grow so much you know, as a culture, as a people. Yeah.
And thank you for bringing it to our attention through a fabulous book and being here today.
Well, thank you very much
for
having me.
Very interesting to listen to. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks.
All right. And for everybody out there, please be sure to put us on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we're joined by Maria Felipe, author of Live Your Happy, Get Out of Your Own Way, and Find the Love Within. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com or subscribe to the show through iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, or Vimeo. If you like what you hear, please leave a review, and because it will help us reach more people and be greatly appreciated. And the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of the latest posts, and if you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, thank you for listening.
Thank you,
Cindy,
so much.
Thank you so much for coming on as the guest host. And I look forward to the time in which you are the guest and we learn a lot more about what you're doing.
Thank you so much.
All right.
Everybody have a great day.
All right. Thank you.
Irreverent. Entertaining. Cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.